I was just hoping you could tell me a little bit about the group and how you guys got started.
We started off being a zine collective. When we first came together, this was a memorial project for a HIV-positive trans woman named Bryn Kelly that killed herself several years ago. She grew up on the West Virginia-Ohio border. And in the first incarnation of us, everyone knew Bryn in some way. Mm-hmm. And this zine was something that she always talked about making. She had been a part of my life since she was 16 and I wasn't much older. And as we were introduced to zine culture in the early 90s from things that would come from Kill Rock Stars and K Records and all that Riot Girl stuff that came from the Pacific Northwest, all of that culture encourages you to be a part of it. The foundation of zine culture is that anyone can make a zine. A zine is whatever you call it. You could make it out of pieces of baloney. You could make it out of matchbook covers. You could have it professionally printed. It's all, you know, anyone can make a zine.
Right.
And that really resonated with us when we were young, and we started making zines immediately. And Bryn spoke about this zine that she was going to make for all of us one day. And it became kind of like this running inside joke of many of our friendships, that when she passed away and I started going through all of the text and the G-chats and the emails and all of those things, it surprised me what a large percentage was just her making fun of this zine that she had been talking about making for decades, at different points.
Right.
And I would wake up and there would be just these hilarious, brilliant one-line ideas for this zine about where we come from and who we are, that kind of, you know, melds these two impossible identities of contemporary queerness and the politics that go with that, and this homespun mountain maker culture. It was disarming, and it allowed you to kind of make peace with this really complicated, nuanced truth inside of you, kind of coming from these two different cultures that to most people they think they contradict each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a really amazing way through her sense of humor and her creativity to kind of show how they can complement, correlate, and complete each other, and that queer Appalachians do exist.
Farewell to the silver bell, to the lion-hearted pride. Beware, beware, hide your shadow away. I'm the fool who steals your time. I'm the
And there's nothing wrong with us, and we don't have to leave home if we don't want to, and we can if we do. And it was just a great way of kind of calling ceasefire on this internal war that a lot of people from this region that share this identity kind of have to navigate on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a great story. Whenever I share the name of your group, if I'm talking to people about it and whatnot, the reaction is generally the same. It's sort of a shock to look like, huh, really?
Yeah, it's like an oxymoron that contradicts itself just from right off the get-go.
Yeah.
That was our first incarnation, where people that knew Bryn that felt it could be very healing to, like, after suicide, after that kind of grief that comes out of nowhere, it was something positive we could all do that pushed us all forward in time. That was our first incarnation. And once we put it on the internet, the community took over in ways that all of us that kind of knew each other in real life could have never fathomed. And the community kind of hijacked the project. We're very grateful that it did. We were real upfront about who we were and what we were looking for from the get-go.
Yeah.
The community, just the response has always been very intense. From the first call out for zine submissions, the first 2 weeks, we had more than enough for a dozen zines. That's how the Instagram became submission-based. It was like, oh, well, we have enough things coming in that we can kind of make this thing that happens in real time. That's kind of like this digital quilt of our regional experiences and arts and communities.
Mm-hmm.
When we put the pre-orders up to make the zine, I mean, I'm 42 years old. I'm a first generation Riot girl. I signed up in my head to make a zine with a glue stick and a stapler.
Mm-hmm.
We had over $30,000 in individual pre-orders before we even went to press.
That's amazing.
The community has always kind of dictated where we're going by them letting us know. So we're kind of figuring it out as we go along. We don't have a lot of experience. We don't have a lot of resources other than kind of what we've built together. But we have great intentions, and we want to make things better in our home place for ourselves and our community.
That's fantastic. So what kind of struggles are specific to your region, and what are some of the particular issues you see in your own community?
Well, I think there are these kind of these top-tier issues that affect everyone, whether they're queer or straight or asexual, no matter how you identify. You're going to be impacted by intergenerational poverty here. You're going to be impacted by food deserts and healthcare deserts. You're going to be impacted by the opioid epidemic. You're going to be impacted by a mono economy that focuses on coal, that breeds this really kind of nuanced, intense type of fragile masculinity that goes with it.
Right.
You're going to have to deal with this, navigate these really nuanced concepts of feminism and Bible Belt wives that's going to look very different than what contemporary feminism looks like through the lens of Teen Vogue or Other Wild or something incredibly trendy like that.
Right.
Like, in many ways it is, it's this whole other world, but it's also very, very beautiful. It's also, coming from this area, I think it's impossible to not feel these mountains inside of you. It's, they can hold you in so many ways. When we start to look at kind of those big regional issues, you know, and throw in geographic isolation, like we can just throw more and more awful stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to look at that through a queer lens, like those issues get actually a lot bigger. Right. Geographic isolation is hard for anyone in this region, but for a queer person, just to give myself as an example, I have a 2.5-hour drive in one direction with tolls if I want to have dinner with friends.
Wow.
If I want to see other queer people in my community, that means that if I want to have dinner with friends or even have a work night with someone else that does this project with me and have an in real life work night where we do things, that means that I have a 5-6 hour drive depending on traffic. That's a tank of gas. That's 4 tolls each direction. Like, that is that kind of isolation where the economy is very much focused on blue collar work,
right,
and working class values and paychecks. Not a lot of people have, you know, $50 or $60 to go do that very often.
Right.
So even if the geographic isolation doesn't get you, your paycheck will.
Down in the mines all
when you look at the opioid epidemic through a queer lens. We're, when we look at, it's like the numbers associated with it are such a huge dumpster fire that we can't look at any intersectional lenses of it. It's like we're not ready to. We're still just trying to get our mind around how awful the numbers are in Appalachia, which is 60% of the population is, they're navigating the opioid addiction in some way that it is causing trauma to their life.
Wow.
Like 60% is a lot, and that's just everyone. Yeah. What we find is that when you add intersectional lenses to that, it goes up exponentially. So if you are addicted and queer, that 60% goes to the 80s.
Wow.
If you're addicted, queer, and black, it goes up even more. If you're addicted, queer, black, and positive, it's can be a lot of hopelessness and helplessness.
Yeah.
Around addiction, we have found in the community. That's something that we've kind of stumbled onto accidentally, and just kind of listening to what people respond to. It became very clear once we published the zine that the majority of the feedback that we were getting focused on the things in the zine that dealt with and gave voice to queer people navigating the opioid epidemic. And after a couple months, it was like, wow, this is a concerning amount. We should maybe do something.
Yeah.
And that's when we put a survey together, and we pulled 100 people that interact with us daily on multiple platforms that identify as queer Appalachians that are currently addicted. And we spent a lot of the spring literally just pulling data and having these very in-depth phone conversations and taking these surveys from these 100 people. Is that out of that 100, only 4 of them had sponsors. What we found was that if you're outside the binary in any way, shape, or form in your identity or gender presentation, that it might actually be pretty dangerous for you to try to access free 12-step programs in your community.
Oh, yeah.
We heard a lot of really scary stories of things that happen to people when you don't have insurance and you're working minimum wage jobs and you have no family or friends, or like you have no way to get into any type of treatment program. Like,
right.
All you have is what you have in your that you make happen in your life. The only thing accessible to these people is 12-step programs that are free.
Yeah.
But they really are not the same resource to the queer community as they are the straight community. And it means that our addiction numbers, our overdose numbers, and our death rate is through the charts because we have absolutely no resources here.
Yeah. Around here, a lot of the 12-step programs are connected to churches. Is that similar in your region?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and our churches have a very specific type of flair to them, too, you know?
What I was wondering was that seems like that would add to the problem, because a lot of churches, you know, and you're talking about people in the queer community.
Exactly. You know. My people are not known well.
Yeah.
I do not do well with churches in so many ways. And if we were in a bigger city, where there would be, you know, a broader concept of the totality, something like that, you know, where there could be like a felt flag with a dove and a rainbow on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that here. Our religion is a very specific type of religion. This is, I personally right now, I am 25 miles down the road from where it's legal, the only place where it's legal to pick up serpents. In West Virginia, as part of your faith, like even the way our houses of faith are named around here, it's like the First Holy Trinity Temple of Jebediah. Like, it just goes on and on and on. Like, it's a very specific, aggressive type of religion that's here.
Right.
And it also spreads to kind of our mental health options as well. I've mentioned healthcare deserts, and the other side of that coin is mental healthcare deserts. Even if you do have insurance, even if you can do the deductible and the copay, there's a very good chance you're not going to even find someone here you want to be your therapist.
That's tough. So what is it that keeps you there in that area? There's a lot of stuff kind of working against you, but what is it about the region and whatnot that that keeps you there?
As someone that left and came back again, it's home. It's never not been home.
Right.
It's always felt like home to me. It's other people that have had the responses of, oh, that's probably not safe for you to live there, or you don't look like you belong here, you should leave, or like it always comes, that kind of response always comes from the people outside of us. Mm-hmm. But I think for queer Appalachians, especially the ones that I know through this project, and to give you an idea of the project, we have on all of our social media platforms combined, we have 100,000 people.
Wow.
That we interact with daily.
Uh-huh.
I think that most people kind of have a similar experience that this is home, that you can go and make homes other places, but that doesn't make your first home or this one home that meant so much to you any less.
Lay me down easy in the valley or the pines, the green river gorge above the South Carolina line, fields filled with gold, junkyards in a row. Lay me down easy when it's my time to go. When you come for me, let the mountains hold.
You know, I think that a lot of people, one of the things that you have to navigate when you come from here is something that we call brain drain, which is that it is a culture that encourages people to leave. Encourage isn't even the word, it's just expected. It's just folded into so many aspects of culture that you know that you're going to leave one day. The example I always give around this is that I have a memory in elementary school where I was first, second grade, very young, and the teacher was writing the R's we were going to learn that year. And she added two at the end, which were the road to Roanoke, which is a very large city about 3.5 hours away from us, where I am. But we're just taught to leave. We're expected to leave. Not just the queer people leaving for safety and community and art and culture and all of those things, but the straight people and all the people that don't even know how they identify with, everyone is taught to leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's also part of a mono economy too, that if you want to have a job, if you want to be able to have a job that doesn't break your body, mind, and spirit underground in the dark,
mm-hmm.
you need to leave. You need to go get a better education in the schools in state. There's always these reasons and all this talk of why you need to get out of here as soon as possible and why it's in your best interest too. So it can be hard to to kind of, we all exist in a kind of like a pressure cooker of all of that chatter always coming at us.
Yeah.
And it does impact our sense of home place, culture, totality, all of those things.
All right. So maybe you could talk a little bit about the art that you guys are involved in. So what sort of, I know you got the zine going, but what sort of art does the collective make?
All of us are artists in one way or another, and we make our living. We're lucky enough to make our living from our art. Our first incarnation of that was definitely the zine, but we found that we can make money through our art too, through the project. So a lot of the t-shirts and enamel pins and stickers and things you see, we all design that ourselves in-house, and we just kind of give the art to the project to make money on.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that we take all of the money we make from our art, all the 25 different t-shirt designs we sell, and all the enamel pins and stickers and boot koozies, and we put that with the zine profit. And we put all of that money back into our community through our community micro grant program. We're just starting to hand out our first round of grants now. It's incredibly exciting. We hope that by doing this, we can literally, by investing in our community, we can reimagine the cultural landscape of Appalachia for us. So there's more everything, more art, more culture, more community, more projects, just more everything, so people don't have to drive that 5-6 hour round trip that it is sometimes that I have to drive, that other people, you know, everyone has their own kind of rural version of that drive that they do.
Right.
We're hoping to change things in a way that makes life here more, I guess the word is easier, but also just to connect community, because it is so isolating to live here too. And we had over 1,000 grant proposals that came in this summer.
Okay.
We're very excited. We're giving out a little under $60,000 this first year.
That's incredible. What sort of grants are you giving out?
The grants are $200 to $2,000. And we've gotten everything from conceptual art installations in kind of dead parts of dying towns to street medic training for regional Antifa. It really, really runs the gamut. And we're excited about funding it all. There is definitely a huge agriculture lens that we see going on with the grants. A lot of people are farming and looking at homesteading and doing seed keeping and really looking at kind of sustainable communities and making these sustainable communities throughout the region for people. And that's incredibly exciting. We've done some installations with some other Instagram artists throughout last year. Xena Warrior Princess is one of them. She has a zine that she makes, and we did an installation called Midnight in the Dairy Queen Parking Lot, a map of rural queer feelings / Melissa Etheridge's gift shop. And it was like a huge life-size salt lamp. Like, it was just a lot of fun stuff to make. There's actually a art show opening tonight at Western Carolina University that I have some pieces in that focuses on queering the mountains and art coming out of it. We do a lot of, we make things to fundraise too. I just finished up a big batch of hand whittled slingshots to send down to a fundraiser in Florida for Black Indigenous birth doulas to raise money for everyone in that organization to get paid. So we do a lot of, we're poor mountain people, but we can give you our art and hopefully you can sell something from, make some money for what you're doing from that. We collaborate with other projects in the region. We do a lot with the Travel and Appalachian Review as far as shows and doing events with them, things where people can come out. We have an event with them in Charleston, West Virginia on the 2nd of September. We'll be tabling at. We're doing a part of the Appalachian Food Summit that happens in the region for all the foodies and the agriculture folks. We're going to be hosting an event with the Travel and Appalachian Review there. So it's a lot of, we're open to doing anything anyone wants to do with us. Like, anytime someone has an idea for an event, we've done a couple meetups too. We're excited to do it. We've done some events with Wussy Mag also down in North Carolina. It's important for us to not just take up space on the internet, but actually have things where people can come out and meet each other and have a better idea of who their regional community is, so they can meet folks not just in the comments of posts, you know?
Absolutely. That sounds fantastic. I love all that. So, you know, this show is a radio show and a podcast. I wanted to talk about music a little bit. We connected over Instagram, and on the Instagram page, I see music brought up and artists and whatnot. But I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the type of music you're into, and maybe just the country Americana kind of flair that kind of comes from that region.
Yeah, definitely. Online, we make a point of trying to be mindful of our roots. We do a lot of reposts from Smithsonian Folkways and Vesta Digital, and those places that mm-hmm. we kind of have this unique opportunity to rebrand. I know what a lot of people, when it's, you know, a 70-year-old woman who's flat footing, I'm sure to a lot of people, they might roll their eyes at that, but we think that's badass and we want to share that.
Yeah.
So we definitely look to our roots to kind of rebrand them and reintroduce our followers to them, in a different way.
Right.
That's positive and encourages connection. I think that all of our listening kind of runs the gamut when I look at all of the people involved in the collective. There is a huge focus on country music, but like the whole breadth of country from, mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at where the Crooked Road is and how that winds down into Bristol and the Hillbilly Highway going down through Tennessee and all of those things, all of that is our regional music from around here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of reverence for when you find that original Carter vinyl at the flea market.
Right.
You know, that's definitely something that gets thrown in the group text to everyone.
That's great. So how can listeners connect with you guys? You got the Instagram page and magazine or online magazine, but what are all the ways that people can connect and learn more about you?
You can find us on our website at queerappalachia.com, and you're going to be able to find our Instagram, our Facebook, our Twitter, our Patreon, all of those things. We just launched a Patreon 2 months ago. We have about 100 people that have committed to giving us about $700 a month so far.
Nice.
We're very excited. And that's a big part of the art that we're making right now, is making super custom things that only go to the people through Patreon. After we did all of those surveys, we started to have an understanding of just the breadth of the need of what was going on in the region, especially as we understood what was going on, that there really weren't any resources, and that we needed, what could we do? What could we do as a group of kind of like working class poor artists? How could, with varying degrees between us, what could we do to help?
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that our strength has always been online. That's where our numbers are with 100,000 followers. So we started to create a digital support space that's peer-led, that's going to be launching here in the next few weeks. So if you can't find a good home meeting that's with a sponsor that's going to accept you, you're always going to be able to find one online. We have amazing therapists and social workers that have been working with us to make sure that everything is professionally done as possible and with as much mindful speech as possible.
Hmm.
And the space will be open 24/7. We have 20 admins and mods. Each of them have at least 5+ years in recovery and identify as queer Appalachians.
Mm-hmm.
And the space will be open 24/7 for people to come in. And we're going to be able to offer e-sponsors through them as well. So you might not be able to find a sponsor in real life in your community, but you'll be able to find one through the program that's willing to drive to you at least once a month for an in real time meeting.
Wow.
And we do have that. We have that correlated with the Patreon, where you can actually sponsor a sponsor to pay for those tanks of gas.
Okay.
And all of those tolls for those two people to meet. So we're pretty excited about building the first resource for our community around the opioid epidemic.
That's amazing. What a great idea of connecting the online community and just bringing a place for people to come together. I love that.
It's what we can afford, and it's where our strengths are.
Yeah.
So we're very excited about it. And you can learn about all of that stuff on our website. It's all those projects, from the grants to QA Recovery have their own section.
I hope you find something to love, something to do when you feel like giving up. A song to sing, a tale to tell, something to love.